Welcome to the Cerebral Edge with strength and conditioning specialist Coach Chris. Join us for the next 30 minutes as Coach Chris shares ways to improve your health in all areas of your life. Along with his special guests, he strives to give you that cerebral edge to help make you 1% better every day. Now, here's Coach Chris.
This is Power Talk 1040 KPPF. Welcome to the show. This is the show that aims to give you the edge to be 1% better every day. Add it all up to 365 days a year, and you're well on your way to a better version of yourself. And I got my boy Nathan Craig with me today. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So Nathan Craig is from Move, Fight, Recover. Let's tell us something about that.
Yeah, so this is a concept I kind of came up with a couple years ago just to simplify things. There was a book by Fergus Connolly called Game Changer that described out the four coactive model, and we can talk about that a little bit more in depth, but it's basically the physical, the psychological, the technical, and the tactical. So I was trying to find a way for guys to execute that. And so what I came up with was move, fight, and recover. And those are kind of the three aspects that makes it an easy execution for everybody to kind of get after it.
It's really interesting. It's a very new, unique concept, right? Thinking about the psychological and all that stuff, because not a lot of coaches think about that part. What kind of got you into all this stuff and really got you diving into that angle of thinking?
So I think it's been one of those things that for years I've been trying to figure out, like, how do you put all of the pieces together? And as you start looking at team sports, you start looking at team dynamics. You start looking at the Rangers a couple years ago were doing, like, how does this guy work with this guy? Well, pro sports have been doing that forever. So we kind of looked at that angle of, like, how do you put all the pieces together? And then there's the sports psychology. And then you've got you know, I was working with the softball team, and their coach was very much on the psychological side. But there's an aspect to it, and I like the way Buddy Morris talks about the four coactive model. As he says, the physical foundations have to be laid before you can have the right mindset, if that makes sense. So if you are not confident in a skill, you're not going to, because you've never done it before, say, that's your physical side of it. So physically, you've never done it. So psychologically, you may not have the confidence to do that skill. So there's that aspect of it. But then there's also the internal, the cellular side of it. You know, if your physical health is not there, the chances of you being in the right mindset are less so.
Yeah, it really all kind of ties together. You see the same thing with, like, any sort of new movement you give somebody, right? They're really kind of shaky. They're really not sure how to do it. But then you do it, you know, for a week, and all of a sudden they think they're a lot stronger, right? But really they just got neurologically adaptation to it, right? And all of a sudden they're really confident in doing that skill. And then you add all the cellular stuff that you're talking about, right? And then you add the psychological, and it really all ties together. And it's crazy that more coaches don't think that way, right? Yeah. So your move, fight, recover. So what are some tips that you give people for the fight aspect, right? So the fight aspect is something I kind of want to dive into a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So the fight aspect, so the big rock on fight is regulating your weekly intensity. So what I have found personally is that for a long time, I wasn't doing high intensity either enough throughout the week, or I was doing too much. And I think that's a problem that a lot of people have, is that you have, you know, the guys are just going ham all the time and they get injured or they burn out. Or you have the other side of it where you're doing your cardiac output and you're doing this low intensity stuff and it's great. But if you don't get your heart rate to maximum, or if you don't take the nervous system to a maximum limit, the chances of you progressing fast go down, along with your potential, I think, is limited.
So how would people know if they're doing too much? Like, what are some signs that you can look out for?
So one of the methods that I like is you can do these questionnaires, you know, as far as like, how was your sleep? How was your recovery? Not your recovery directly, but how was your energy? All those kinds of things. So your subjective and objective metrics. I personally do HRV every morning. And now with the new Garmin software on some of the newer watches, it integrates all that together to a training readiness status. So that's a way is using metrics and questionnaires. And then the other way is just if you just aren't feeling it,
right.
maybe you're going too far. And then I think in the other side, if you're just not noticing increases in performance, you may not be doing enough. And I would say that most people should probably take their heart rate to maximum, probably once a week. Doesn't have to be for long. You know, it might be just be 10 seconds, a couple rounds of that, you know, with some rest in between. But if you're not hitting that often enough, you may just find yourself not really progressing very fast.
Yeah, because you kind of have to move the needle a little bit, right?
Exactly.
I mean, the only way to move that is to get out of your comfort zone and go a little bit harder than normal, right?
Yeah.
But then that leads you into your recovery, right? So what are some of the best recovery methods that you use for people?
Number one is sleep, and not specifically the volume, but the quality. So I think a lot of people know, hey, 7 to 9 hours of sleep, great. But they're not tracking the quality of that sleep. They're not kind of measuring, like, how do I feel afterwards? You know, do I have energy in the morning? Those kinds of things. So I think, to me, it's sleep quality, which comes down to a routine before bed. So, you know, is the room dark? Is it cool? Is it the right temperature? Do you have, you know, noise mitigated? Those kinds of things that will actually make sleep better, I think will help.
Are you a big guy in the blue light, too?
Yep. So I wear the Raw Optics lenses. So I wear those at night, generally right after sunset-ish time frame, 7 p.m. or so, 7:30, depending on the season and the time of year. But typically, once the sun's down, I toss those on. And for me, I'm very sensitive to artificial light. I go outside, it's typically not a problem, but artificial light does give me some issues. So during the day, I do wear the yellow lenses at work when I'm on the computer. And then the orange lenses at night.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. There's been a huge kind of back and forth because of the artificial light stuff, right?
Sure.
Some people go, yeah, it's, you know, it's really detrimental. And other people go, ah, it doesn't really matter that much. But I think it's very individual. Isn't that something you would say too?
Sure. And I think too, if you look at just that kind of the swings in, you know, what kind of artificial light are we looking at? And one of the things, I don't know if you've heard of the light diet. So one of the things he gets into is the flicker rate of the light bulbs and the artificial light. So you can actually regulate that without regulating the blue light, and it still has a similar effect of knocking out the blue light. So a lot of times these LEDs, you can turn them red, but if the flicker rate is too fast, it'll kind of stimulate the nervous system and kind of fire it up a little bit. So that's one of the things you can look at too, is not just the color of the light, but the actual flicker rate.
Yeah. Light's also something really good that I like people to do in the morning, right, is to get out and take like a 5-10 minute walk, like in the sun, because people will get up and they'll be like, I just need to grab my coffee first thing in the morning. It's like, maybe you should just go outside for a little bit and take like a little bit of a walk, get that natural blue light and you to kind of wake you up a little bit. So I think routines for bedtime, for waking up, I think they're instrumental in your performance.
And I think if we get back to the move, so we got move, fight, recover. On the move portion, one, my big rock for move is daily mobility. And I kind of split up mobility into actual joint mobility, rotations, and then actual mobility of getting joints into position, which then leads into, I just call it movement in general. And movement is your sequencing those positions, which eventually work to locomotion. So if you're looking at the whole spectrum from joint mobility all the way up to sprinting and skill sets of movement, you know, whether it's moving locomotion, paddling, swimming, running, biking, hiking, et cetera, doing that earliest in the morning, I find gets the joints prepared for the day and your body just wakes up. If you can do it outside, all the better.
Yeah, it kind of gets that synovial fluid kind of moving around a little bit too. But not only that, but joint mobility, like a lot of people will say it or they'll say they do it, but it's kind of almost been bastardized a little bit, right? To where they're like, well, I'm doing all this mobility. It's like, well, you're just kind of throwing your body around and you're not really controlling the movement. So when you're talking about joint mobility, are you talking about feeling it or stretching, or how do you kind of go about it?
Generally, for me, it's more the a lot of that rotational type working on a specific joint. So for the listeners, if they've got their thumb, they can move that around in a circle, you know, clockwise and then counterclockwise, mm-hmm. doing five on each finger, you know, kind of work that way, working the wrist, the elbow, the shoulders, the neck. So you're working up the line, you can work the hips, the back, just doing a lot of the circular type of stuff is how I prefer to do joint mobility, mm-hmm. Which is also going to help build the mind map of where the body is in time and space, which helps with athleticism. I find it helps with reaction speeds and other little things that you don't even think about.
Yeah, a lot. Like, I remember it helped me with my back pain a ton is when I went and saw, you know, our good friend, Dr. Grove, back when I was getting out of the military. And I was like, man, my back hurts. And he's like, well, let's do these ankle tilts, right? Mm-hmm. Let's do these toe pulls. And I'm thinking, you're crazy, man. Like, this ain't going to do anything. And then all of a sudden he's like, now bend over and touch your toes. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And this was back when I couldn't even get to my knees.
Sure.
I did a little bit of just ankle mobility, and all of a sudden I was down almost to my toe. I wasn't quite there, but it was a significant change, and I was like, what is the deal with that, man? So, yeah, the joint mobility stuff has been really interesting in helping a lot of people with their mind-body connection, really.
Yeah. It's a whole rabbit hole we could go down, and then
oh my gosh.
You start digging into the RPR and all that other stuff, too. That's kind of what we call trainer magic, but it's not really magic. It's just working with the nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times when you do that and you work with their nervous system, they're like, you're magic. And it's like, no, it's just science, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you took like a lighter back in 1800, right, and you did that, they'd be like, it's witchcraft, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's just evolved science of how the body's working and how we're really finding out how it's supposed to move and how it's supposed to work, right?
There was a book a couple years ago. I don't know if you're familiar with James the Thinker Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book on the global dynamics of coaching. And one of his theories, he's like, how much of the universe, of the total knowledge, do we actually know?
Oh, yeah. Not very much.
It's not very much.
No.
And so you break that down to what do we know about Earth? What do we know about, you know, certain countries? What do we know about the human body? We think we know a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, how much do we actually, like, this is factual? We know that gravity works, and that's been sustained for a couple hundred years.
Mm-hmm.
But what else is actually factual? I mean, all the time we're finding, you know, why do we actually sleep? Oh, we found out that we're cleaning out, you know, all the kind of remnants of the day of processing things. Mm-hmm. So you get all that kind of garbage that's mm-hmm. up there needs to be flushed out, and that's what sleep does. So mm-hmm. all these things that we just don't know about the human body and just have no clue. And
yeah.
We won't find out for years. And then years later, we're like, oh, we were completely wrong on X.
Right. I mean, you look at just how science has evolved with the human brain, right? And when you're talking about sleep, but it's also when you're sleeping, you're also learning, right? That's how you're kind of downloading everything. Yeah. And for years, people didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right. And then all of a sudden now it's like, yeah, that's actually what's happening, right? You're taking that out. But not only that, the recovery factor with the growth factors that are coming out during sleep as well. But all right, let's take a quick break here because when I come back, I really want to get into the four coaxial. Is that what it's called?
Four coactives.
Four coactives. Really great info. I think it's going to help us out. So we'll be back in just a minute. This is the Cerebral Edge with Coach Chris on Power Talk 1040. We are back on Power Talk 1040 KPPF. This is the Cerebral Edge. I'm Coach Chris. He's Nathan Craig. And we are talking about move, fight, recover. And we're getting into the four coaxes of training. Four coactives. I keep messing that up. Four coactives. So let's go ahead and break that down for the listeners. Tell them what it is and how they can apply it.
Sure. So this is a concept that Fergus Connolly brought out in a book called Game Changer a few years back. And I learned about the book from Joe DeFranco. It was on one of his podcasts. It's a great book, and it covers the full spectrum of not just like team sports, but also the tactical side of it, of how you integrate all the things. Before we get into the four coactives, one caveat that is not really heavily emphasized but should be is that everything is surrounded by health.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are not a healthy athlete, if you're not a healthy operator, all these things aren't going to matter. Mm-hmm. So you want to ensure that health is throughout. Mm-hmm. So the four coactives you have, and like I said, I like Buddy Morse's philosophy on it of the physical comes first, and then you have the psychological, mm-hmm. which allows you to execute technical skills, which mm-hmm. then allows you to select the appropriate tactical skills or game plan.
So Buddy Morse, for those that don't know that's listening out there, is one of the highly regarded strength and conditioning coach. I think he did a lot of NFL teams.
He's at Arizona.
Arizona right now, but he's like the gold standard of the strength and conditioning coach. Just for those that don't know who he is, but continue, go on.
Yeah, so the basic gist is if you got all your physical components, you know, how does your body move? What is it physically doing? You've got your psychological components, and those are pretty obvious. I think most people can kind of figure those out. The technical components are your skill sets of your sport or activity. So if I'm drawing a pistol, that is a technical skill. Mm-hmm. If I am executing a shot in soccer on goal, that's a technical skill. Mm-hmm. A tactical skill is more what you'll specifically hear like in hockey is called game IQ. This guy's got really good on ice hockey sense. Mm-hmm. Like he's got eyes, like he can see the ice. So you start hearing those things, that's really the tactical skills. Mm-hmm. And I think those two aspects don't really get covered as much when we talk about training. I think a lot of people focus on the gym stuff. Yep. They're pretty good with it. Sports psychologists, everybody just kind of sets it off to the side for the sports psychologist and does their thing.
Right.
It should be integrated, but that's kind of the point is to integrate all this. Mm-hmm. But then the technical skills, like how do you integrate in technical skills with your gym time? Mm-hmm. Do they intermix? Do they interchange? Are they at the same time? Is your technical practice going to actually have a physical component? Mm-hmm. If you think about most team sports, typically you're measuring speeds ran, you're measuring volumes ran, you're measuring all this stuff if you can, if you've got the metrics. So this is kind of part of the entire training aspect. But like I said, I think tactical is one thing that just doesn't really get covered much. So your game IQ is knowing what your team is going to do, knowing the game plan for the game, mm-hmm. but also knowing what your opponent is going to do mm-hmm. and knowing their game plan. Mm-hmm. So if option A opens up, what is that going to mean for your team? And what is that going to mean for the opposite team? And it's the same on the tactical side. Mm-hmm. If U.S. Army is going to execute option A, you know, what is op 4 B going to choose as a response? Mm-hmm. And kind of game playing that out. And knowing that and having the experience, this is why Olympic athletes that have more exposure to more sports typically do better, because they've seen the body in different positions mm-hmm. in different sports, allowing them a larger library of exposure and experiences.
Yeah, and that's a huge thing is being able to get your body into different positions and really feeling that out. So when you come back to your move, right, what are some things that you have people do to move throughout the day?
Yeah, so, and we were talking about this during the break, is the way I kind of break up the day is we start off with joint mobility in the morning, mm-hmm. combined with a little bit of just regular mobility, getting joints and spots and opening up the joints, mm-hmm. Getting the body ready for the day. Then we move into some RPR, reflexive performance reset, mm-hmm. for those that aren't familiar, just hitting the nervous system. Now, if it's a training session that is aerobic or cardio or locomotive based, then you've got your move portion is going to be the cardiac output or whatever that locomotion type activity is. Mm-hmm. If it's a fight session, so a fight session is more you're getting after the gym stuff, getting high intensity. And so you could be locomotive and high intensity at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you could be doing a one of the favorites on the team is threshold runs.
Okay.
So your goal is to get your heart rate to maximum for whatever the duration of the time period is, typically between 4 to 9 minutes.
Okay.
And maintain that maximum heart rate.
For 9 minutes?
Woo! That's the worst. The 9 minutes. 9 minutes. Actually, I think 4 by 6 minutes is probably actually the worst.
Oh, my gosh.
Even though it's 3 minutes less, because you're maintaining it for 6 minutes, but you have to do it 4 times.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's rough. Yeah. But doing that will jump up your conditioning very fast. The key is you do it once a week. Mm-hmm. You're not doing it 3 times a week. You're not doing it every day. It's just something you do once a week to maintain and or develop your conditioning. So that's kind of the gist of some of our move stuff. The other side of it, as we get into, we start looking into some of the movement type skills. So we're talking about that progression, joint mobility to movement. Now we're looking at, you know, some of these jiu-jitsu drills. We're looking at how do you move your body, kind of parkour type stuff. Mm-hmm. So how are we getting our body in positions to put it into a position of dominance? Mm-hmm. So as we start looking at the tactical side of it, like how do we want to get into a position of dominance? And that can spread all the way through, you know, a position of dominance in jiu-jitsu. It could be a better shooting position. It could be a better position for observation. Mm-hmm. Or it could just be a larger scale, like how do we achieve a position of dominance over the opponent at a tactical level?
Okay. So trying to get into position of dominance, are you talking about strength? Are you talking about mobility? Or are you talking about the whole gamut?
It's all of it.
It's all of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, and I think jiu-jitsu is probably the easiest way to think about it is, mm-hmm. is you want to achieve position before submission.
Mm-hmm.
It's that same concept, but using your mobility and your joint mobility and everything you've developed prior to those actual movement skills. So you're moving into movement, which is sequencing your mobility, mm-hmm. and now you get into the actual technical skills of nice. Being able to apply.
Very good. So what is some of your favorite joint mobility drills that you have people do?
So I really like just kind of the head to toe mm-hmm. circular rotations.
Okay.
That's kind of my favorites. Other stuff, I mean, I like a lot of the ground stuff, but if they're not jiu-jitsu guys, typically they don't get into it as much.
Mm-hmm.
And the training surface. When I was deployed overseas, ground stuff was almost non-existent. You know, we had a piece of plywood as like our surface. So you've got gravel and you've got that, and there's just not enough space to do a lot of it. So I prefer a lot of the stand-up stuff for especially guys overseas because mm-hmm. they'll do it. Some of the ground-based stuff is a little bit harder, but I do like that stuff if you can do it.
Right on. So let's go through your three, move, fight, recover.
Yeah.
And give one tip for listeners that they can apply today, like right now they can start doing.
Yeah. So move, free, fight, recover is just the simplified version of condensing down the four coactives.
Right.
So move, number one, the big rock is daily mobility.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically joint mobility.
Mm-hmm.
For fight, the big rock on that is your weekly intensity. So making sure you're getting at least one maximum heart rate and or maximum lift type mm-hmm. of thing in at least once a week to hit either the nervous system or the cardiac system.
So you do one or the other? You don't do both in that same week?
It kind of depends. So there's... During our strength phases, like actual strength phases, like guys are hitting probably doubles mm-hmm. and triples. And you may still do a Wednesday threshold run.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you are hitting both of those.
Both of those in the same week?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I find that as long as one is nervous system and one is cardiovascular, they tend not to interfere too much.
Right.
So they tend to work out pretty well because at the end of the day, everything is at a high intensity but mm-hmm. a low volume.
Right. Right. And then we got the fight, right?
That's so that was fight.
Yep.
And then recover, the big rock there is, like I said, the sleep quality mm-hmm. versus the sleep duration. So I don't know if you're familiar with the REM cycles or 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So generally what happens if people feel tired is because they're waking up during the middle of a REM cycle.
Okay.
So if you can actually sleep shorter as long as you're waking up at the end of a REM cycle, but then that quality should be higher. Should
right.
As long as you did everything right before bed.
So that always happens, right, when people hit the snooze button and then they go mm-hmm. back into bed, they kind of go right back into REM and then they cut that REM short and that's yep. why they wake up more tired.
Yep. and I'm sure with you working with firefighters, like they probably mm-hmm. have a lot of issues with REM sleep because mm-hmm. it's always being disrupted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the time. I mean, they're one of the hardest ones to get to do things because of their wacky schedule. So, yep. I mean, their training's got to be pretty dialed in or else it'll jack them all up. But
sure.
Anyway, Nate, how do people get a hold of you? What's your website, email, all your tubes, YouTubes, everything?
Yeah. So YouTube and Instagram are Red, White, and Blue Fitness.
Mm-hmm.
You can also go on to Train Heroic Marketplace, search Red, White, and Blue Fitness, and you'll see all of our programs and teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Facebook, just Nathan Craig.
Man, this has been one of my more favorite episodes because we got to nerd out a little bit, talk about RPR, talk about the nervous yeah. system, talk about joint mobility, which is always one of my favorites, and then recovery, which is huge, that I don't think a lot of people take into consideration. I think recovery is probably one of the most, it's boring, but most impactful for your exercise.
Absolutely.
So if you want to get a hold of me, right, CerebralEdgePerformance.com. If you have questions for the show, CerebralEdge1@gmail.com. It's been awesome to have you guys on. Been awesome to have Nathan Craig on with me today. This has been the Cerebral Edge on Power Talk 1040. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope what you heard today will help you make you at least 1% better, because 1% every day adds up. Join me next weekend right here on Power Talk 1040. I'm Coach Chris. He's Nathan Craig. Stay strong.
This has been the Cerebral Edge on KPPF. Have a question for Coach Chris? Email him at CerebralEdge1@gmail.com. That's CerebralEdge, the number one, at gmail.com. Join us next Saturday at 1 p.m. and Sunday at 10:30 a.m. for another episode of the Cerebral Edge with Coach Chris on Power Talk 1040 KPPF.